Good evening, everyone. This episode is like a reactionary one because we've just had a budget announced by the government today in the UK. So it affects farmers a lot. So we decided to speak on it or speak about it, and we've brought in an expert in money, an accountant, the name of Sophie. And yeah, so we'll chew the fat on this this evening. But before that, we'll do our usual. If you know it's not a normal episode, we'll do our usual good, bad and ugly. Or would it be ugly, 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 considering what's come out of the budget? Which one do you want to take?
Well, I'll go on, Sophie. Go on, you go first.
Welcome good, along. Bad or ugly of your day today?
What about the good of my day? Good.
Yeah,
go yeah, on. My good. Probably only four shits in the parlour today.
Only four what?
Four shits.
What on you?
Not on me today, but four shits in total. Whole milking, pretty good going.
That was. What do you normally get?
20, because they're still on grass.
What?
Yeah, like and the normal ones do it. It's like a normal
projectile.
Grass. Yeah, old projectile. Yeah, they're still on rich grass in the day, so. I'm sure Neil's had worse today.
I've had, well, in the shit, now I just end up with bits of hoof in my hair. You don't have to live for that anymore, do you now, Sophie? I imagine that there was one time when Tom would come home and you'd find hoof everywhere and you're like, where is this coming from?
Yeah.
And I'm still there, like, you know, my partner often says, like, well, how's it got in the bathroom? I'm like, well, it just gets everywhere.
A bit like straw.
It does, yeah.
So what are you going for, bad or ugly?
Well, do you know what? Considering today is a pretty ugly day, I'm going to do another good. And it actually is, today I had the pleasure of calling in for a quick pint in the Farmer's Dog pub, which is owned by Jeremy Clarkson. And fair play to the man. He has created something now that is unbelievable. You know, people queuing to get in, parking in the field opposite to get in there, and paying absolutely top dollar for some fantastic local produce, beer, cider. So, yes, incredibly, incredibly unbelievable, really, just to sort of see it. I've never seen it before. I've never been to Diddley Squat Farm Shop. And to go and see it firsthand was actually quite like a bit of a wow because, you know, you see it on telly, you see everything. I sort of roughly know Caleb a little bit just from similar area. And I look after the cows that the milk goes into the vending machines there. And, yeah, it was pretty astounding. So, yeah, big, massive kudos to Clarkson for what he's done because he has created something there that is great. And you've got a pub, and on the side of the pub has a huge sign that's the full length of the pub, and it says, all right, it says Hawkstone, and it says Backbushes Farming. And you can't fault that. To have that on the side of a main road on the A40 is fantastic.
Lovely.
So, yeah, I'll take another good because we all need good.
I'm going to have to do a hat-trick here because the episode is going to be fairly ugly, so might as well go with that. We'll go with the third good. I finally managed to butcher up some pigs yesterday, so I'm going to be fully stocked again on an online shop. I've struggled with stock since I did a market like 2 weeks ago because I sold out, and I've just not had a chance to top up the supplies. But as of tomorrow morning, Halloween, payday, people can stock up on Ginger Ninjas.
Nice.
Ideal.
Right. The budget. I've been working all day, so I've not had a chance to look at it properly, but I've got a window here with the key points. got back, fed the pigs, cooked. So, I've literally not sat down properly and had a look. But from what I'm hearing from many farming friends, and one of my colleagues actually is a farmer's daughter, and yeah, she's not happy. But from the bits I've heard briefly, the main thing is that the fact that the inheritance tax has been, it was tax-free before, wasn't it, on agricultural land?
Yeah, so
and now,
APR relief is what they call it, mm-hmm. agricultural property relief, and including the house, if like the farmers mm-hmm. too. And we've seen land prices increase ridiculously over the last period of time, like especially since COVID. I don't know what it's been like with you guys, but land prices have gone up ridiculously. Yeah. You know, you're not buying a farm under £1 million now. You know, it's pretty. So setting like the new level at £1 million, I mean, that's not really going to cover anyone. So the first million's free, but after that, it's 20%. Well, I don't know how that succession's going to work, passing it on to the next generation now.
So with that, and that's what my colleague was made very clear, that's like the main point of contention. I'm not a landowner yet. Hopefully, if I'm successful, I'll get some land. Is there like some sort of clause? Because with normal inheritance tax, with people that aren't farmers, do you always pay tax on inheritance? So if, let's say, I inherited my parents' house, I'd pay some form of tax or not? Yeah, regardless of the value of the house, or is there a relief?
No, there's relief on it, isn't there? So you can have £500,000 worth of. But the best way to describe it, so you and Nikki, okay, you're married, right, and you own a house, and your house is worth, say, £500,000, yeah, and you've got £300,000 of assets. You both got £500,000 worth of tax allowance each, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So unfortunately, you die, Flav, and you leave it to Nikki. Well, you've used your £500,000, so you're fine. And then Nikki's still got £500,000, so you don't pay any tax.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So you don't pay any, basically any tax over £1 million.
Yeah.
That's basically how it works. So it's a very, very, very small percentage of the population that would have to pay tax. Does that make sense?
So this is my thing, that the fact that, like, farmers have always had that
APR.
Farmers have always had that APR. What's the word I'm looking for? They've been exempt on agricultural land, and then now they're not.
Mm.
Why? Oh, here we go. Here he is. He's back. Listeners, the third prong has just entered the chat. Where have you been?
Good evening. We've been at a really random event at Raby Castle in the northeast. I didn't really know what it was involving, but
lots of what were you doing there?
Animals and, yeah, so the kids had a great time, anyways.
And we were hoping you were going to say you've been in government today
I think I'd be locked up,
causing havoc. Yeah, so I was.
We're just talking, Chris. We're just basically starting to talk about the APR stuff.
Yeah.
So we just did a little bit of basic thing about, you know, how we're just talking about how it was and how it is going forward.
Yeah.
So for a non farmer or a non agricultural land owning person, if they were to ask, so I'm going to play that person because I don't own any land yet. Mm-hmm. Like I said, yet.
So
why is it a big deal? Like, other people that aren't agricultural landowners have been okay with the way things have been going, and they've not been benefiting from that exemption of tax on agricultural land inheritance. So now people will have to pay tax on it. Why, as a non-farmer or someone that doesn't own land, why the big deal?
I think it's the value in the farms gone up so much, and also being able to follow a lot of these people who worked on farms for very little, in the idea that the farm might be passed down to them.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? So like that's part of it. And keeping a farm in your family is going to be very difficult. That kind of money, if we're talking, you know, £2 million farm, the second part of that, half of that, is subject to 20%. And who, you know, farming is, well, we all know this, is so marginal anyway.
Yeah.
Where's that money coming from? You know, the succession, it can't just be passed on the generations. This is generations and generations of farmers who are going to be affected by this. And it's
You're just sort of taking the incentive away of passing that asset on to your next gen and giving them the chance to have, to farm as a lifestyle and have that asset, but it just makes it almost impossible on those margins for some of those. And also, some of the guys that land has gone up so much, if land did drop, and they'd bought land at, say, £10,000 an acre, they'd struggle to service that debt.
Mm. Exactly.
Mm. I described it in layman's terms to my 11-year-old daughter a minute ago because we were talking about it and she was asking. And I used one of my farms as an example because she knows the farm. And I said, look, this farm, you know, I think it's about 250, 300-acre dairy farm. Mm-hmm. They're milking sort of 240 cows for robots. Incredibly good farm, really good, invested massively.
Mm-hmm.
But I sort of said, well, when the parents, you know, they die, effectively, you know, their children have got to go and find probably £800,000 to pay the government in tax. You just think, how on earth? They haven't got £800,000 in that business because they've invested continually in the farm. They've invested in infrastructure. They've invested in technology. They haven't got 800. Not many farmers do have £800,000. And that's a small farm. That's only 200 or 300 acres, you know, and that's the thing. I mean, I'm not a farmer. Will it affect me? I don't know, but it just doesn't make sense.
No, and I mean, I don't know if you guys saw in the sorry to take it down, you know, a pretty horror story, but a chap, I think 2 days ago, committed suicide because of this, just so that he could get it passed before this came in. And, you know, this is a real life.
I saw that on the farming forum. That's madness. Yeah. I think, aside from whatever we talk about here, because I know some people, this will affect like that family. Mm. This would be such a raw thing to talk about, even listen to us during the fight over. But it's madness that whoever in government, whatever people sit there and discuss this before Reeves comes out, holds that box that looks like an LP player out there to say this is what I'm doing. There must be people there, like they get paid enough to think about all these what if, and clearly they didn't. And to have someone, a family, to lose a dad just so that he can help the family essentially not pay that, that's nuts.
It's the ripple.
It doesn't even bear thinking about.
Yeah. The ripple of that is generations of ripple of that death.
It's bonkers.
There's lots of other things there that are going to affect farmers. You've got the employers' national insurance has gone up, like
minimum wage.
Yeah, capital gains tax.
That's 24%, isn't it?
10% to 18%.
Yeah.
It's not just that. It's everything that. And you do think, has this been a bit of an error in by some of the agricultural lobbyists as well? Like, have we missed a step here? Like, what have we been doing the last sort of 4 or 5 months with this new government? Like, for this to happen, like my thoughts on sort of marching and I'm not the biggest fan of farmers sort of protesting, but I think this, if ever there was something where everyone needs to come together and really show the government that this is just not on, I think this is the time for everyone to come together. Because I read a comment from the Labour Secretary Steve Reed, and what did he say? Something like, farmers will just have to learn to do more with less. And that is the Defra Secretary. Ridiculous.
I mean, that's what we've been doing for generations, isn't it?
Yeah. It's crazy. I mean, going back to the APR stuff, which I think I've concentrated on that for a minute, and you look at all of that, I mean, also, I mean, like, Chris, your family's a tenant, am I correctly saying, on a tenanted farm, aren't they?
Yeah.
So how is that going to affect, you know, when your landlord, you know, dies and he has to pass that on or do whatever he does? There's going to be a massive effect there for tenanted farms, aren't they? Because these estates, all of a sudden, you're going to be going back a long time, you know, in history where you had, like, massive estates that were broken up because of death duties. That was a big thing, wasn't it, in the 1800s, yeah, around death duties. And we've almost gone back to those times because estates like yours, Chris, you know, that how is that going to affect those sort of places?
Oh yeah, well they're gonna. It's gonna be back to like the sort of years ago when estates had to sell stuff off for inheritance tax. It's just gonna happen again, and a lot of farms aren't gonna be able to buy their own farm, especially with tight margins the way they are. And there'll be a lot of farms like us that nowadays, really, it isn't a clear line between sort of owned and tenanted land. There might be quite a lot of tenants have probably bought land as well as they've gone on, which will then be affected by that as well. And it's with especially that all that's going on with legislation on sort of carbon policies as well, a lot of farmers must just be sat there tonight just thinking, why the hell do I bother? Like, what is this all for? Like, am I even, if I've even got a son or daughter that wants to enter the business, like, am I doing the right thing in carrying them on? Because is there a future for them? And if this carries on, then I don't know myself, to be honest.
I think there's a really strong message right now from government on respect. I don't feel like it's actually like the respect of a role of a farmer in society right now. That just doesn't come out with that at all. Like, no. And I am the head of the farming minister, Daniel Zeitner. I really liked him. And I think he's actually very good. But I don't know what's happened between then and that box coming out, because I'm actually really shocked. When there was rumours around that APR, I was like, oh, it will never happen. I was like, it will never happen. We're talking about food security. We're talking about next generation, talking about all of those things really actively in the press and everything. And you've just come out with this.
Thinking about it, like, you know, like from a dairy business, you could have a farmer that's in his 50s or 60s, say, and their children are involved with the farm, and they've made a decision that they're going to invest in infrastructure. So whether that's dairy, whether it's like someone you're dealing with, Chris, you know, like, we're going to put some poultry houses in, we're going to borrow £1 million over 25 years or something like that, take a mortgage out to do whatever this massive investment structure is. Well, all of a sudden, that's like, well, hold on a minute, because you've got to factor in that when the parent dies, that there's going to be some inheritance tax to pay there. So that's going to have a kick-on effect with your type, potentially your types of business, Chris, you know, and everything, and borrowing and banks and finance and everything like that. It just keeps going.
And like, I do feel for the bank managers and the accountants today as well. Like, they must be just absolutely inundated with questions. And again, a lot of the devil is going to be in the detail with this. There is, like, as much as it looks doom and gloom, there will be, for those that can really sort of plan ahead. But what happens with a farm, for example, if the farmer died suddenly, then they would have nothing in place at all.
No.
So it's
going to change the tenancy market as well, because a lot of these, I've got, like, Chris, I think your family have got, is it a generational tenancy?
Yeah, it's a three-generation FBT.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, that won't be able to be changed and altered, because a lot of these estates are in trust.
Yeah.
And so, like, that they got the APR on tenancies, if that made sense. So, like, that would have been allowed if it had been tenanted out. They still would have had APR. Well, unless it's actually actively being farmed now, there's not, that changes the whole landscape for a tenant as well, because the landlord's going to want a totally different agreement.
Oh, yeah.
And if we're talking carbon farming, and that's going to come in, and it might be more profitable for them to do other things with it.
So, a point you make there, Sophie, about the respect and how farming is not seen as a serious job. I've said this, I don't know how many times, that when and Chris mentioned it briefly there about sort of going to streets or whatever. When the French were doing some stuff, and Dutch or whatever, aside from those mini groups that were meandering in, into farming thing to push their agenda. We know who they are. Aside from them, their core, like their farmers, when we see them doing that, we're here like, nah, it's not too bad here. It's not too bad. Well, guess what? It's bad now. And until the day, I've said this so many times, until the day an English, because does this just affect England? Does it affect Wales? It's just England, this, isn't it? The budget.
Yeah.
This yeah.
No, the APIs. So,
that will be the whole thing. The APIs. It's the subsidy that is ring fence. So Wales
has a
system and things than us.
So I've always said, until the day a British farmer feels uncomfortable, like today, we're not going to do anything. Because when something squeezes here, well, I'm still getting BPS, that's going. Or when something goes here, oh, I've still got countryside stewardship scheme, right, that's going to get phased out. When something goes here, oh, I'm still getting SFI. But now this one's gone into the core. People are going to feel this in, like right in there. So I'm hoping finally we're going to stop being all nicey-nicey and gentle and just tell them like it is. If it means going out there and causing havoc for them to listen, then why not? And I said this way back when we were doing the thing about like supply chain fairness or whatever. But a point I was going to make there, back to two points actually. One is saying about the farming that's going to be hard to take from generation to generation. Does that mean then potentially British farming is going to be less sentimental? Like compared, let's say, to New Zealand, because I've got friends in New Zealand that, let's say, mates that are engineers or teachers, their parents are farmers, but they don't care shit about the farm because their parents will sell it, they'll get the money, and it's not like it has to be passed down. Same with dairy farms and share farming there, etc. And then the other point I was going to make, we can discuss all this after the second one, is farming margins, which we've all mentioned about margins there. Will this then finally make farmers push for better margins? Because if now we're getting squeezed on inheritance as well, we'll be like, oh, but we're running businesses on small margins, which is seen as a norm. The fact that farms can run on small margins is seen as a norm. Yeah. So are we going to get to a point now that farming is actually, okay, if a doctor has to work to a profit, if a hotel owner has to work to a profit, if airlines have to work to a profit, are farming business is now going to be seen as a serious job? And people having to work on serious profits rather than just constantly scraping the barrel.
I mean, your final point, that would be nice, Flav. Like, I'd love it. So much of it, well, in the dairy industry, I can't speak for your sector, but it's so much global. Like, we're so exposed to global pricing and supply and demand. So it puts us at more of a disadvantage, if that makes sense. Yeah. If we're going to incur this additional, I mean, I'm a tenant, but it will definitely directly affect me because it will affect my landlord. That just puts me at more of a disadvantage on a global level, because a lot of the milk prices now are done globally. It's actually, even if they're like a cheese product, you know, say Barbers or Wyke, like a production like a British, they still get pricing from global level. So it just puts us at more of a disadvantage, and with you, it's very difficult with a scale of business 2 million litres to do something with, if that makes sense. Like, it's a fresh product. Yeah. You can't be like, oh, I'm gonna just make cheese suddenly, or I'm just gonna, you know, it's just a lot of milk. Even, you know, even a smaller dairy would struggle to suddenly switch into selling direct, or it's a big investment, if that makes sense. It would be nice. The sentimental thing, I don't know how you feel about that. I mean, Chris, are you sentimental about your farm, even though it's tenanted?
Oh yeah. I think most tenant farmers would. Yeah, it's where you live, and like most tenant farmers, we've invested a lot. The farm is unrecognisable from when my family sort of took it on. So I think it's just tenant is just a label. But I would say every tenant farmer, especially on longer term tenancies, really treat it as a home. If you're maybe on a 5 or 10 year tenancy, it's different. That's something I think's wrong with a lot of agricultural tenancies, that maybe land agents especially are looking at things too short term, and things are getting raped and pillaged because farmers can't afford to invest. But those on long term, treat it as their own and look after it. And I can't get my head around as well with this, where with that 1 million threshold they've done, like, that pretty much just means that, because I think animals are seen as an asset, and any like equipment is seen as an asset. So really the only people that this wouldn't affect is if you were literally a hobby farmer with 20 acres with about 20 sheep and a house with it. So there isn't even anything for like to even help the really small farmers. And I think one thing we've probably agriculture's got in our benefit today is actually this budget really affects the sort of the real working class people with these like the biggest hikes in tax. Even a lot of the Labour staunch Labour supporters are going to be sat at home tonight thinking, bloody hell, how do I afford to feed my family and stuff? It really, like, Liz Truss got a lot of criticism for her budget, but this is next level.
No, it's on another level from Liz's. But I mean, like, going back to like sentimental and stuff, what you said, Flav, I think, you know, I've got friends in New Zealand and stuff, and I think New Zealand's a different market because a lot of corporate business own land in New Zealand. Mm. It's very, very, very different. So I think a lot of the family farms have been lost in New Zealand. Mm. A lot of farms have been taken over by big corporate enterprises. And I think the government somehow thought that there are a lot of corporate businesses in the UK, and I think there probably is corporate business in the UK, buying land to avoid taxes and using loopholes. Mm. And I think that is happening. So I think you have to be aware that that is going on, and there is businesses that are going out and buying land just to avoid stuff, but the percentage-wise is tiny. But I think they viewed it that that's just the standard, what everybody's doing. And I think, you know, somebody, a small family farm, you know, farming a couple of hundred acres, you know, on the face of it, yeah, that farm might be worth £7 million or £4 or 5 million, but they haven't got that. It's just bonkers. It really is. Mad. It's crazy. And I think something needs to change on it. But then I think the next sort of, the next big thing that affects it is this minimum wage.
Mm.
I think this is absolutely massive for farming. Mm.
Neil, before you go into minimum wage quick, you compared Liz Truss there. I can't even believe we're referencing that human. Liz Truss.
I know, but look at this week, careful what you wish for. That's all I would say.
But no, Chris.
Liz back. That's what I'm saying. Okay.
The question I was going to ask there is, and this is beyond whether someone's blue or red or green, following or whatever. And I think this is a bit of politics that I'm still getting my head around in this country, how it almost seems like a family thing, whether you're conservative or whatever. And people are always so coy about discussing politics openly. Whereas in Kenya, I remember growing up, my dad would discuss politics with his mates to the point of almost punching each other. And then they'd just be fine because it's like talking about sport. Will you just put again, Chris? Liverpool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I support Man United. Neil supports what? Birmingham.
Yes.
Yeah, and we might not see eye to eye when talking about football, but like, we're still friends. So anyway, I think it's we can't forget.
That's why.
Yeah, I'm definitely not. Neither's Neil. Neither's Neil.
You're right. We're coming. We're building up.
So my question is this.
Getting started.
Like, at the moment, it's so easy to be like, I can't believe Labour are doing this. And a lot of friends I know that are conservatives or people that vote conservatives will be loving this because it's like, look, you voted. Even seeing comments already, people are like, oh, you lot voted Labour. But then we're forgetting what they've come in, what they've walked into. So whatever the situation that was left for them by conservatives, they now have to find money from somewhere to try and rectify to go forward for their term, isn't it? And we mentioned this before, I can't remember what episode it was, saying how it would be good if there was like long-term plans for any government coming in. That, okay, this is a 10-year plan for food, for transport, whatever. And if you come in, you don't have to change it to put your mark. It has to go like that for 10 years and then you go on. And I think that will probably avoid things like this, because currently it's almost like, oh, they did this, we're going to come in, try and fit like the private school tax or some of the other bits that they put on there. Mm. I think we can't forget the mess that they were left with.
Yeah,
not saying what they've done is good.
A lot of that, like a lot of the debt was caused from COVID.
Yeah. By who? Who was in there then?
Yeah, I know, but like most countries in the world are in terrible positions because of that. It is
because of COVID. And I think, you've also, go on, Chris.
I think a lot of the stuff, I haven't always been his biggest fan, but I think Rishi Sunak's address today was really strong. Like, he really did tear Keir Starmer a new one today. Like, he pulled apart all of the sort of pledges that he made. And I think that is where it is. I think what he said in the run-up to the election, he has promised things which he wouldn't do, and he's gone back on a lot of them. And it reminds me a lot of when we had the coalition government with, I can't remember the
Cameron
name.
Cameron and Nick Clegg.
Yeah, Nick Clegg, yeah. Like Nick Clegg promised so
Nick Clegg was like a shadow in that coalition. I don't remember him doing anything.
He went back on everything he said, and that today really reminds me of that. And I think he will have lost, especially with the sort of two-tier argument that was already there. I think we'll struggle to ever have seen a prime minister in his first 3 or 4 months premiership to be that low on confidence. And I think I said to you at the time, I think the Conservatives, they weren't.
What about Liz Truss?
Good for agriculture. especially in Forest. It was like packet politics, wasn't it? But I'm pretty positive to think we wouldn't be in this situation today if Rishi was still there as bad. That's my own personal opinion anyway. But
yeah.
You get there, Sophie.
Yeah, it's all right.
I'm just getting a charger on. And it keeps playing the same music.
Okay. It sounds like a horror. It sounds like a horror film music.
It does. It...
I can't stop it now.
Are you
check it out.
Because you're like... You...
It's a fucking Christmas decoration.
Got fucking shining.
You're not putting Christmas decoration,
are you? Please, no. I'm going to prop it up with some books now. That thing is driving me mental. There we go. Just
please
turn it
tell me not putting Christmas decorations up. That may have been a joke.
No, but I think, I think Chris, you're right, and I think a lot has to be. COVID has a massive effect on stuff, huge. And I think the other thing I remember in this country, there is some and this comes, we'll move on to this after, talking about minimum wage, right? It links into it. But I was reading some stats the other day that there's 9 million people. 1 in 9 people are on sort of disability living allowance. There's been a massive shift from, people, because it's harder to claim, unemployment, they go on to this disability and they'll claim something. And you think, wow, 1 in 9 working people are not working for some reason. That's horrific. And in Wales, in the valleys, it's 1 in 4. So 1 in 4 people in the valleys in Wales are claiming disability allowance and not working. Like people of working age. So we've got 9 million people that probably, a percentage of those can't work. I accept that. That's fine. But there will be a chunk of those people that can, and they're choosing not to. And I think there's some massive things here that it's a really easy fix for the government to turn around and say, do you know what? That hardworking farmer there that's worked for generations, fuck them. We'll have a bit of that. Because because that's an easy fix. That gets money straight away. And where the harder fix is actually to solve some of the problems within our society. And that's incredibly difficult.
That's really interesting, Neil. And I know, Flav, you feel quite strongly about this as well, is that, I feel like farming and food is such a solution to so many problems in our society. that actually you're now penalising us for something that we actually can be a solution. Like, the health of the country is very reliant on the health of the farming of the nation. You know, I really, it can be, you know, if we get this right and we, you know, we educate people about where the food comes from, we teach it in schools, we get kids out on farm, there is so much we could do with that. But now, actually, we're going to be less likely to want to do that. If you're penalising us in another way, how are we going to get enthusiastic about having these things and influencing in a positive way? You're just stamping on us.
Yeah. Mm.
So just looking at some of these key bits from this budget on The Guardian, which is quite reputable, I'd say. I saw earlier that the defence money is 2.9 billion increase in military spending, right?
Mm.
And for NHS, it says it is going to be a 10-year plan. Well, what's a promise? Promise a 10-year plan for NHS, and it's announced that it will be 22.6 billion increase in the day-to-day health budget and a 3.1 increase on the capital budget. So if we're just going to look at just the, and then that includes 1 billion for repairs. Have you been to hospital lately?
Yeah.
1 billion for repairs, and you're putting 2.9 for defense. And then you've got here 1.5 billion for new beds in hospital and testing capacity. When Noah was born last, pretty much this time last year, well, a month out, we were in hospital for three weeks, two different hospitals, quite big ones, one in Portsmouth, Princess Anne, and I think it's, I can't remember what the other one's called, but big hospitals. And you look at the facilities, even you talking to the staff, because we're in there long enough, like on first name basis with some of these people. And I'm like, how do you lot work in here? The food is shit. The heating, some places, doesn't work. The beds, I slept in a bed for a week that while staying with Nikki. It was like sleeping on an ironing board. And yet, you've got a billion for repairs and 2.9 billion in defense. Like, why do we have to? I know we, as a country, have to protect ourselves, but we're protecting ourselves in, you could argue, because we've gone somewhere and caused havoc, and then now we come back to our right. We caused havoc.
That's there. A whole different argument.
Yeah, let's sit back here and wait for them. It's, oh my God.
It's a different argument.
And it's like, yeah, argument. But all this stuff's going on. And again, like, she's committed more money again today to HS2.
I know.
I thought they cancelled it.
Yeah, me too.
Well, no, from Birmingham North.
12 billion overspend already. And I think she's committed another 4 billion to take it to Houston.
Houston, to tunnel it to Houston, yeah, because at the moment it finishes away.
Like a
combat. So, I mean, there's a whole new podcast. I've got some good friends, farmers, because that's my part of the world.
I remember when I worked for the NFU, that Birmingham to London train isn't bad anyways. It's not.
No.
It won't be on time. Train.
Well, Chris, you lived in Stoneleigh or just outside Stoneleigh. So if you can imagine your NFU building, yeah.
Yeah, it goes right through it, doesn't it? Pretty much, well,
yeah, literally, right next to it. It is phenomenal. It's like somebody's just got like an angle grinder and just shoved it down the countryside and just put a huge big gash. But that's a whole different thing. Minimum wage, that's going to have a huge impact on farmers. I think, Sophie, you made a good point earlier when we were talking, because we both, you know, both got backgrounds of being herdsmen. That's bonkers, because all of a sudden, people who work on farms on salaries, that's going to be, that's dangerous territory.
Yeah, it will be unachievable with the hour per hour. We're going to have to be very careful as an industry that's being worked out, that we are paying people the right amount. I mean, we
should
pay people the right amount anyway. But it's an increase that I don't know where that's coming from in the margin. Like, I want to pay my people fairly, but I, you know, for an apprentice, when you're putting a lot of work into them as well, they've increased that. I think it was £7.50. It used to be like £5 something, but you're doing
£6.40 to £7.55. It is.
Yeah. Well, that is, you know, that's a big increase. And yes, I think people should be paid fairly, all of those things, but to it's a lot of work having an apprentice. Like, I love having an apprentice. We always have one on the farm, but it is a lot of work. Like, it is a lot of work.
So, we go back to margins, props up again. So how about after they've had their budget and they can clink their glasses tonight, blah, 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 whatever, they should probably organize a meeting somewhere and have heads of farming, probably not just the organizations, because we know some of them aren't as useful as they should be. Have some heads of farming there, have heads of supply chain as well, and discuss this, because whenever we talk about margins, who's the one that's pinched every time?
Us.
It's the farmer. So we're like currently we're worrying about your standard cost, the usual cost of production, what you pay yourself. Some people don't pay themselves. Like our friend Johan said on Twitter once, how he puts himself like £2.50 an hour, which is nuts. Like I'm not doing that. If my whole tenancy is me earning £2.50 an hour, I'll quit. I'm not doing it. I'll go earn money somewhere else, less stress.
Yeah.
And then you've got to worry about weather. You've got to worry about your health, mental health. I know other people do too. You've got to worry about how much you're going to pay people. Then when it comes to being paid by your customer, you know you're going to possibly be just about making money or making a loss. And then it's like, how? How does it work?
Yeah. But as well, just...
So,
but as well, so our margins are going to be pinched. But then you look at it from the processor point of view as well. So some of these big processors employing a lot of people, they've just had a huge hike on minimum wage. They've had the business rates are going to double. So that also has a, well, it's a big knock-on effect for farmers as well, because that means that they're going to, there's even going to be even less of the profit to pass on to the farmer, because they've really been pinched. So in an industry that's already, yeah, margins are unbelievably tight, this will have a big effect on the processors and stuff today as well. Especially if you employ some of the numbers that some of the, like Arla or ABP or somebody like that, some of the big guys, it's going to make a big difference this to their bottom line today as well.
Mm. No, you're right. It's every business out there, isn't it?
Oh, it is. Like, what incentive is there for a young person wanting to start their own business? Like, you must, like, someone in at university today, clever guy or girl, like, thinking, right, I've got aspirations to start my own business and employ people. And yeah, it's a bit like I was speaking to some Americans, and I think one of the reasons Trump got in 2016, whenever it was Barack Obama was very much associated with a similar thing of just losing connection with the business community, and that sort of was the main focus of Trump getting in, and it again seems in this country like we have lost that link to the business community, which is such a key link for a government to be successful.
But then from the bits you just listed there, Chris, it looks like in this situation nearly everyone's stung. Like, whether you're a farmer, whether you're just the general public, whether you're a big business owner, it seems like everyone's stung. And the thing that I'm asking is that, one, normally politicians will go one side or the other. Like, conservatives are like, yeah, pro-farming. Well, not pro-farming, but they'd always do things that if you're rich, you'd benefit, blah, blah, blah. Mm. Whereas this budget doesn't seem to benefit anyone. And that just poses a question in my head that is that how bad the country has got that we now have to almost like go from ground zero and work up or what? Because something had to be done if the country is in so much debt or things aren't working. Something had to be done. And anything that was put out today of the budget, someone would have been stung. So does that mean then they just sting everyone and then you can all grumble? Or, yeah, I just don't, trying to get the logic in some of the bits that they've done. I'm like, I don't get it.
But I don't think it's just farming, is it? I think it's just it's across all businesses. You know, we're talking here about the effect that a £12, you know, the minimum wage will get, you know, effect on people getting up to £12.21. you know, you take any manufacturing business, you know, food manufacturing, things like that, where you've got operatives online that are on weekly paid minimum wage type things, all of a sudden that then increases their margins. So like food manufacturing is a really good example, because all of a sudden they've got to pay their staff more money. So what are they going to do? They're going to squeeze the person below them, and the person below them supplying the raw products into food manufacturing is farming. Mm-hmm. And that's the reality of the issue, is that, you know, we are, as farmers, at the bottom of the, you know, everything goes up from us. And like you said earlier, if you're producing 2-3 million litres of milk a year, or if you're producing, you know, you've got 32,000 hens laying in a shed, you can't totally say, do you know what, we're just going to direct sell that. You can't do it. It's just not possible. Not everyone can do that. You know, Flav, you're in an incredibly fortunate position that you found a niche, you're passionate about doing what you do, and you can succeed in doing what you do. But the majority of farmers can't do that. You know, that's the thing. And it, you know, and also there is a saturation point. There's a saturation point with milk vending machines. There's a saturation point with any forms of vending machines. You know, the bottom line is that a farmer should be able to produce milk, beef, chicken, pork, whatever it is, sell it into the commercial market and make money. That's the difference. And when you've got all these things coming in now, it just makes it incredibly hard.
Mm. Yeah. It's just obviously, like I think I said when I came on, there's definitely been a failure from those representing the industry and the industry itself to make the government understand the rural sector and how important it is to protect food security. Like that.
Yeah,
It's just sort of been lost. And yeah, like I said at the start, just what have these conversations been like in the run up to it? Surely some case studies on the impact this would have. I know it's been like, it's been rumoured now for the last sort of week that it was coming, but
I think
how it's got to this.
Yeah, I do, and I'm going to, I mean, I do agree in some ways with you, but I do feel like the Chancellor, I think she was going to do this no matter what came in. I think this was always, not an easy win for them, but it's going to generate a lot, if they action it in the way they're saying, it's going to generate a lot of income.
Yeah.
And I feel like the bodies that are representing us have definitely been in there for a long time. And that Daniel Zeichner has been sharing an office, NFU office, and he has known exactly what on the ground it's looked like. That's been fed through hard to him. But it's just that she's come out with that box, like Fav said, and I felt this last 2 weeks that it wasn't going to happen. Like I thought it was just a bit of a joke, to be honest. And when they came out with it today, that APR, I just think, is there any going back now? I mean, it's going to cause absolute chaos.
So if I don't know if you've touched on it, but did you see the, obviously in the dairy sector, about the review on thresholds for sugar tax?
Mm.
And they are considering extending it to milk-based beverages.
It will be, yeah, that will be another stab in the guts. I feel... People are just starting to return. So, like, there's some really good studies on people returning to dairy from other alternatives. Like, 82% are returning back when surveyed, and that's actually really good. And it's like me and Tom, we had breakfast this morning, like all of us, the kids, etc. We've got the luxury of doing that because we work early and come in and they're on half term. But we were just saying, well, it actually feels like people are coming back to meat and dairy and like wanting to saw, you know, a bit of that. And so I feel like, you know, if we're going to start suddenly labeling milk as sugar, you know, that is bad, then it was just going quickly backwards, because I feel like we've made some real headwind in the last, with the campaigns and the milk, you know, all of that.
Yeah, I think what the government need to realise is that governments don't grow economies, businesses do. And they only do that if they've got confidence in the market and the government. And I don't think they do.
Yeah, I think some of this seems, obviously they've probably done some work behind the scenes, I hope so, but a lot of it seems quite off the hip, like this, the milk thing is talking about the taxing. What? Like, what's that on? It's, yeah, you just, and I think, Neil, you mentioned there about your last point about not just being farmers, it's just like the minimum wage thing. I think it's high time now farmers speak up, man. Like, none of this round table nonsense.
Yeah.
Nah, that doesn't work. Don't sit there and talk to someone that's going to tell you that they will do X, Y, Z, and as soon as you walk out the door, they're giggling to their aide and their 15 entourage that they've turned up with, hashtag Therese Coffee, and you know they're not going to do anything. Like, enough is enough now. Like, if we, if people just sit back now and take this and not say what they think properly and go to, then we need to take what we get because it's like, yeah, it's madness. When nurses got done, they went on the streets. When doctors got done, they striked. When train drivers got done, they striked. When farmers get done, you have a few hundred turn up. No one else does anything because, nah, we don't do that. That's not British culture. Well, guess what? British culture is this getting stung by your own government like this. So we either do something about it or just carry on suffering.
I do think this is a good opportunity because it is the whole supply chain could come together on this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like the retailers, the processors and the farmers. Because it's in all of everyone's interest for farmers to thrive. Retailers and processors need farmers to thrive and to be able to supply them with produce. So some of these things today are really going to have big impacts on supply chains and where food's coming from.
And the cost of the food.
And the cost of the food, yeah. Because that's what we've got. Like, we're still in a cost of living crisis. Like we talked about last week, didn't we, about the that campaign on from Riverford ploughing their own furrow on bloody, saying everyone's a mega farm, obviously in their own interests. But like, we've got to, like, we can't all buy a £20 box of vegetables. Like, we need to look at what our consumers can afford and produce them affordable food. And this, a lot of these steps today are just going to make it nearly impossible.
Hey, Chris, they might be able to afford it with the increase in minimum wage, right? But then, look, that's another thing I thought about there, Neil. When you say, so I was thinking of it as an employer, and I might be one in future. If I was an employer, I'd be like, ooh, that's an extra. Like, I remember how I used to work before, when the minimum wage went up, it was deep five-figure increase just like that on their wage bill because, like, when you've got that many staff. But as an employee, I'd be like, what? Minimum wage gone up to 21? Loving it. So, like, it swings in roundabouts, doesn't it?
Well, I think it does. It does swings in roundabouts, but I think what it comes back to is, you know, we'll wrap this up, but I think what it comes back to is that farmers, you know, are sort of like, you're producing something that you don't know what you're going to get paid for. You know, that's it. That's the crux of the matter. You don't know what you're going to get paid for it.
Yeah.
But we know that we've got to pay somebody X amount of pounds minimum wage. We know to produce it. We know that the feed cost is this. We know that the vet cost is this. We know that all these costs are fixed. And we know exactly what they are. But the big difference is we don't know what we're going to sell the product for. Yeah. So, you know, you do your cash forecast, your cash flow and all the rest of it. And on a line milk contracts, you have to do that. They want to know what your production is. They want to see your production curve. And you do all of that and you're sort of still, well, we don't know what we're getting. You know, this is the thing. And it suddenly can change.
Yeah, I mean, Neil's so right. I mean, like, for a real life example, tomorrow we've got our milk price calls. And that is action from the 1st of November. So I know, find out tomorrow what I'm going to be prayed for next month's milk. So how many days have I got, you know, How much notice have I got?
Tomorrow's 31st, yeah. And it starts from the 1st.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah. That's telling me what.
Why?
Because
yeah,
that's how Arla do it. Okay. So Arla don't give you any notice. Arla, not alone. Muller are the same, and a lot of the big people are the same, that they don't give you any notice. So they can literally just drop that milk price, or they can increase it.
Mm-hmm. So some of the smaller dairies
will give you a month's notice. So some of the more regional dairies will give you a month's notice. So they'll tell you, but the downside is that your milk increase for August, you're not going to get it until October. Mm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, so you're always that sort of thing in behind.
Front, but it's like going back to your point, Neil, is that we just don't know. We can't plan. Like every decision we make on farms long term, but then pricing wise, it's so short term.
Mm.
So Sophie, if you were to call up tomorrow and say, actually, for whatever reason, or if you kept it quiet, whatever, you say, right, look, I'm not selling you milk as of tomorrow. How would that affect you? If you were to do what they're doing to you, do it the other way around. How would that work? I'm not supplying.
So our milk, we have to give 12 months notice.
What?
Yeah, and we. And I'd have no income, you know, while I'd have our beef and things. But that's, you know, the thing with the milk is it's monthly. We get paid twice a month for our milk. And because it's so fresh, you know, obviously it leaves daily at the moment, but paid twice a month. And being part of a co-op is good because you get a payment on top of your milk price because of the share of the profits. And I'm very happy with Arla. But it's all these decisions we're making long term, like breeding, all of those things, investment are so long term. But we are so affected short term by pricing. So like milk price, now it's out of our hands, labour cost.
And this is where
it's allowed.
Go on, Flav, sorry.
I said it shouldn't be allowed, man.
No, but this is where the APR thing is so probably affects dairy and probably poultry, I'd say, more than anything, because of the amount of investment.
Mass investment, yeah.
Oh,
yeah, it's huge investment, isn't it? You know, like Chris, you're dealing with the poultry, you know, me and Safe, obviously, dairy, very, very biased dairy. But, you know, from your point of view, Chris, dealing in the poultry industry, you know, so I, you know, I'm a beef farmer, I'm farming, you know, a couple hundred acres. I come to you, I want to fit a shed out, I want to have 32,000 laying hen shed, how much money is that going to cost me? Ballpark figure.
Well, you wouldn't really convert a shed,
Build a shed from scratch. That's what I mean. Yeah, build a shed from scratch.
32,000, you're looking at 2 million quid.
2 million quid.
Yeah.
So there you go. So you're going to go, and the chance of massive percentage of that is going to be borrowings.
Mm.
So, and what's that going to be over 25 years? What's an average sort of mortgage?
20 years, yeah. You're looking to pay
20 year mortgage.
Between 8 and 10 years, yeah.
Yeah. So how, and then also then you've suddenly got to pay some APR and inheritance tax in the middle of that 20-year period, the job's fucked.
Yeah.
It's shit.
Yeah.
So.
Mate, so deflating, man. I'm not even in the position these people are, like you say, the big dairies, and it's so deflating. Actually.
Not even big dairies, Flav. It's a dairy farmer that's decided to say, right, I'm going to go and put robots in. I'm going to go and spend $500,000. I'm going to put some robots in. And that's not a big dairy farmer. That's the thing.
It just comes back to that messaging from government. Actually, we talk about like food security, and that's what they really wanted. And they even renamed the job, didn't they, of food security. I just feel like it's a massive kick in the guts. And I feel like it's a signal of how invaluable we seem to be to them. Like, it's not just the money. It's the signal that it's sent.
Yeah, it's all performative nonsense. I've always said it. Like, whenever you go in there to these meetings, and even you meet MPs, like, you can... You know when you talk to someone, a fellow human being, and you just look at them talking, you listen to them, you're like, this guy, their mouth is moving, or guy or lady, their mouth is moving, there's sound coming out of them, which, in form of words, but there's no substance. No substance whatsoever. They're doing a job, 5 years, and their wage. Boop, they're gone somewhere else. They're going to earn more money, and it's just a cycle. They don't care. They do not give a shit. Question, though, which I haven't asked. When this thing comes in, is there any way to avoid it? Like, because is it true that with the normal inheritance tax, if, let's say, I pass whatever I own to Noah before I die, or however many years before you die, then you don't pay...
7 years.
You don't pay tax. 7.
Yeah.
So then, I know that will be a tricky thing with succession in farming, because that's another issue we deal with as an industry. But then, surely, if we backed against a corner, then potentially we might have to improve our succession plans in the industry, not waiting till someone's on death's door to then be like, oh, actually, I'll give that 10 acres to Neil, 5 acres to Sophie because you're a girl, and 15 acres to Chris because he's a good schmoozer and a good blagger. Like, we have to think that, you know, okay, I'm going to die one day. I'm now 50. I want my kid Noah, who's X age, to take over. Put this plan in, sort it out, and then you avoid it. So I guess the whole succession job is going to have to get a bit better then, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's a different environment. Like, it's a different advice, totally different advice. And I think there'll be a lot of accountants going home tonight being like, oh, man.
Yeah.
It's a devil in the detail, because that's what it is. There will be ways, there will be something there, but we don't know what that is yet. But I think, I think we need to sort of pull this to a bit of a close, really.
How much are you shocked?
We could talk all night about, basically, show what it is. So it's, but yeah, well, thank you. Anyone got any more points? Don't think so.
No, I don't think so.
I feel exhausted, man.
Yeah,
feel exhausted.
It's hurting my brain.
thank you for joining us, Sophie.
That's all right.
That was good, and yeah, we'll catch up soon. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thank you so much, Sophie.
Okay, pleasure. Nice to see you.
See.